But we can talk about Samsonov. We can talk about the discipline. We can talk about all these things. But 9 out of their last 10 playoff games, they have scored 2 goals or fewer. And that is the main issue with the team right now.
Massive issue for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Tonight was a night, we mentioned the tight hockey game and not a lot going on. The power play was an opportunity for the star players to field the puck and create some offense. I thought it was terrible tonight, and they got to make an adjustment and switch it up.
So we have a saying back home that when a person like Brad Marchand offers you flowers, that the vase is usually coming at you, right? He was so complimentary to the Leafs, saying that they're physical. The flowers were handed out, but the vase came right back at them.
See, you can hate on the refs all you want, complain about the refs all you want. The Maple Leafs had more power plays, and it's a serious conundrum, the fact that they cannot take advantage of home ice. It has to change. I mean, it's going to have to change at some point in this series. If they want to win this series, they're going to have to win on home ice.
Brian Hayes dropping conundrum last night on SportsCenter. You know things are dire for the Maple Leafs when conundrum comes out of the haze of the mouth of the captain, Brian Hayes, who was down at Scotiabank Arena last night with us. Coco sitting next to us, and he was a little bit concerned leaving the rink. He thought maybe he was responsible for the loss. Whenever Brian's down there, I guess whenever we're down there too. Basically, whenever there's a home game for the Leafs, they lose. That's now 5 straight home games that the Toronto Maple Leafs have lost, including last night, 4-2 to Boston, game 4 Saturday night at Scotiabank Arena. All right, let's not delay. The audience has been waiting to have their voice heard on last night. It's time for Wake Up Woodbridge.
Time to make the call.
Now, what's this number? Who made this call? I don't know what's this number. What is this number?
Wake Up Woodbridge.
Buongiorno.
Wake Up Woodbridge.
That's right. So wake me up. All right, so we've got some of our favorites on the line. Let's start with Jack in Uxbridge, Ontario, our good pal, who we did not see down at the Leaf game last night, maybe Saturday. Jack, good morning. What's on your mind? Oh, well, that's a shame. All right. Let's move on to Frank in Markham, who I'm certain has some very pointed thoughts about last night's loss for the Leafs. Go ahead, Frank.
I hate this team. It's like...
You're having nightmares about your wedding again, aren't you, Frank?
Honestly, Coco, I was snapping so hard last night. My fiance, her face was, I think she was a bit nervous. Just like, do I want to marry this nutcase? I was going crazy. Like, what are we doing here, boys? Saturday night, I got a confirmation. I'm looking forward to it. I was hoping to be 2-1 series. Willie coming back. Put a stranglehold on this series. No, I got to call in. I got to be negative. I got to beat a dead horse. Ilya Samsonov, you guys nailed it on the head. He wasn't paying attention. When that goal went, when the puck went behind him, he was looking at the other side of the ice, looking at the scrum. That was a backbreaker. Second goal, just as bad. Third goal, he's on his knee 7 seconds prior to the shot. Stick or no stick, stand up. Power play. Everybody's talking about it. I called in after game 1. They made one adjustment. They haven't made the other necessary adjustment. We are playing against a great penalty-killing team. We need to have an advantage. And we are lacking that advantage because of our point guy. Number 44. Again, love him or hate him, he's not the guy. Make a change. 0-for-5. Austin Matthews had one shot on the power play last night. It almost went in. One shot, it almost went in. God forbid he gets 5 or 1 a power play, right? We can't have it. We don't run it through him. But for whatever reason, we threw out the same thing since March 1st, and it's failed miserably. Make a change. Make a change, boys.
Thank you for the call, Frank. And I think Frank...
Enjoy your Saturday,
everybody.
Buddy.
Yes, enjoy your Saturday. Nylander may be returning on Saturday.
Maybe that's the change.
That is the change. That's a very important thing. There's no doubt about that. All right, let's go to John in Newcastle on Wake Up Woodbridge. What's up, John?
Hey, Coco. How are you guys, man?
What's going on, John? Do you hate this team, too?
Should I come again?
Do you hate this team, too, like Frank does?
I love the team, but the team, I love and hate the team. Keep it that way.
Okay, you got a love-hate relationship.
Yeah.
What's up?
Yeah, man. I think if you look at all the problems the Leafs have, it all points to the coaching. When you look at the scoring issues, every series, if you look at right from Columbus, Montreal, Tampa, we've only scored like 2 goals every game. Every game is 2 goals. When this team is built for offense, why can't they score? If you look at it, every time they come into the offensive zone, it's like they don't know what to do with the puck. They cycle the puck, and all the teams do is park every single player in the slot. The Leafs have no answer. And the coaching staff comes up with the same things again and again. Other teams like, you know, we know what we're expecting. Power play, same issue. It doesn't work, they try the same thing again. I think the coaching staff needs to change in order for a new voice, a new tactic, a new place to come out. Because it's the same thing over and over again, and it just drives you crazy.
John, thanks for the call, but I got to strongly disagree with you, man.
What is it you disagree with?
Coaching is the issue with this team?
Well, I mean, what John points out is true. They've scored 2 goals or fewer in 9 of the
past 10 playoff games. What does coaching have to do with that? I mean, adjustments. Your team is built around 4 players. What adjustments do you want the coach to make?
And you're missing one of those. I guess
the coach has tried to make every adjustment with this team, but the coach doesn't go out there and put his skates on. You know what? They replaced 2 assistant coaches last year. One of them runs the power play. So you still want to blame Sheldon Keefe? Like, the guy who's getting criticized for all of his decisions is Jim Montgomery, not Sheldon Keefe. Jim Montgomery has split up Marchand and Pastrnak on power play units, and he's playing a goalie rotation.
And
we want to talk about Sheldon Keefe being the problem of this team. Look, when you start directing the problem of this team to coaching, you're taking the attention off of the players, and you're letting the players off the hook. This same group of players has been together for 8 years. The same guys that we continue to count on come playoff time. And we want to look at the coach. What is any other coach that's out there right now going to come in and do differently with the same group of players? When it comes to playoffs, there's only so many things a coach can do. At the end of the day, it's all about the, do you think the coach went out there and scored and made those plays for Brad Marchand? Come on. Let's not get away from what the real problem is. It's not the coaching.
All right. Well, I like that. That was a very good retort to the caller there. Let's go to Rob in Woodbridge. Go ahead, Rob.
Hey, guys. Good morning. If you look at the series, it comes down to goaltending and special teams. Their goaltending has been way better. And when it comes to,
I wouldn't say it's been way better. It's just it hasn't let in the leaky goal like Samsonov has.
Okay, but Carlo, that's what the playoffs are about. I mean, I'm sorry, Samsonov, an 8-year-old can stop that shot. Like, playoffs, it's a game of inches. Swayman, you cannot beat that guy. So you make a mistake like that, it costs you the series. It cost us the game last night, and I hope it doesn't cost us the series. Now, I want to bring up Keith. I'm not going to blame him, but on the panel last night, okay, they talked about when the Leafs tied that game up, that line, they had an unbelievable shift. They were on for almost 40 seconds. And the question was, should they have taken that faceoff and been on right on the next shift? It was a chance they took. And what ended up happening was JVR went off, Marchand jumped on, and they got caught, and that goal got scored. Now, yeah, the coverage was horrible, but probably it was horrible because maybe that line was tired. So I'm not going to say Keith is the reason why this team is not successful in the playoffs, but I think it's this entire organization that has just failed miserably, from Shanahan to the former GM. I mean, Tree Living has come in here and he's identified this as a soft defense. I mean, Liljegren on that game-winning goal, I mean, what's he doing? You got to skate with that puck. He's soft on it. And that led to the goal. So it's frustrating being a Leaf fan. I mean, I'm
55. I agree.
I don't know if I'll ever see a cup. But you've played 5 straight playoff home games and you cannot win one of them. Yeah. I'm sorry, and I agree with you. A lot of this is on the players. Marner, I'm sorry. You want what? A $12-13 million 8-year contract? I'm sorry. You don't deserve it. Not here. I'll let you go, guys.
Thanks, Rob. And we appreciate the calls, and obviously with Rob, like, he wants to point out the game-winning goal, leaving your top players on the ice? What do you think? What do you think the temperature would be if he threw his fourth line on the ice? Like, this is your top players, 40 seconds or not. You're putting your top players on the ice to get the job done. And, like, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, he shouldn't have put that time. Like, you got Matthews, Domi, and Bertuzzi that have been the best line in this series going up against Frederick, Heinen, and Marchand. You need them to get the job done. That's not a coaching decision. And then you need Liljegren to make a stronger play. After you score a goal to make it 2-2, you want your best players on the ice. I'm not going to sit here and start, you know, micromanaging that decision. It's nonsense, if you ask
me. The Leafs are more than capable of matching up 3-on-3 as far as their forwards go against the Boston Bruins. I'm with you there. It's on the players to make the right plays at the right time. And in those situations, the Maple Leafs did not.
I get the frustration around Marner, but we don't need to get into the contract talk in the middle of a playoff series.
No, I mean, if they flame out, don't worry. We'll be talking about
it. Nonstop.
Keep in mind, he doesn't have those 3-plus people. Anthony and Kleinberg, our final caller. Go ahead, buddy.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm going to need more than ginger shots this morning. I have to pull up the wheat grass this morning.
I love it.
You know what? I don't agree with that previous caller who was ripping on Sheldon Keefe. I'm not the biggest Sheldon Keefe fan, but like I said, after that first loss, there's no question these players are skilled. It's all mental. It is all mental. Last night, you had a player like Brad Marchand took the team on his back and scored that goal and led that team. Again, too, I'm anticipating a big Leaf win on Saturday night. Either it's going to be Matthews, and I know I ripped on Marner the other day about his contract, too, but he's got a breakout, too. You know what? At the skill level that these players
have. I agree. Everybody agrees he has to break out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all mental, and if you get over that mental hump, they should be able to get over to get that win. It's not about skill. It's not about coaching. It's a mental game. Boston's in their head. Get them out of their head. Go play simple hockey and get it done.
That's Anthony and Kleinberg, our final caller here on Wake Up Woodbridge. And we'll be doing Wake Up Woodbridge again on Monday morning following game number 4. Could be quite the edition of Wake Up Woodbridge one way or the other. So, again, Saturday night game number 4 at 8 o'clock from Scotiabank Arena. Leafs, Bruins, Toronto down 2-1 to Boston. The NFL draft is tonight. Got a couple hockey games, got some hoops as well. We'll tee that up with Dave Naylor, who will be a part of TSN's coverage from Detroit. He joins us on the other side. Also, Mike Johnson, some of our conversation with him. And my FanDuel best bets. All that's still to come in Hour 4. Hour 4 continues. This is first up on TSN 1050. The Leafs lose. Yes, they're down 2-1 to Boston, but tonight you could settle in and watch the NFL draft on TSN. You'll see coverage throughout the day. It will include the man on the line now, live from the Motor City in Detroit, Michigan, the Nail Gun, Dave Naylor, with us on the show. Hello, David. How are you?
Is Dearborn, Michigan, the Motor City? I guess it is, actually. Right around Dearborn. The corner Dearborn. From the...
Dearborn's an awesome place to live in Michigan, by the way.
Yeah. The Henry Ford, like, World Center right around the corner from us here. And, all kinds
some
of stuff.
Sick, there's really nice Fancy. Neighborhoods there.
I'm sure Dave's staying in a very expensive hotel room or Airbnb. That's how we do it at TSN. All right, let's get to the draft tonight, Dave. There's a lot of intrigue surrounding the quarterbacks. People believe it will be Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May. 1, 2, 3. How many QBs do you think we could see in the first round as a whole?
I think we could see 6. You have those 3. Then you could have J.J. McCarthy. You could have Michael Penix. And you could have Bo Nix.
What?
And yeah, I mean, that's a lot. But the thing, there's 2 waves, right? There's the teams at the top of the draft that all need quarterbacks, which don't necessarily mean they're all going to draft quarterbacks. I mean, you could look at a team like New England and say, you know, are you better to trade out of the 3rd spot, get a haul, build your roster, and take the quarterback next year? The other theory is that, hey, how often do you pick in the top 5? Take that opportunity to take the quarterback while you're there. But there's that first wave of teams where we know Caleb Williams is going to Chicago, right? And there's a high projected probability that Jaden Daniels goes to Washington. Then you've got New England. But then there's another run for back hungry teams when you get outside of the top 10. You've got the Vikings at 11. You've got the Broncos at 12. You've got the Raiders at 13. And, of course, there's a possibility that any one of those teams may want to trade up, especially the Vikings, who have some draft capital because they have another first-round pick at 23. But if they don't, the question is going to be, when you get to those teams, if there's already, let's say, four quarterbacks off the board, when you're one of those teams at 11, 12, and 13, can, even though it's a quarterback, how do you feel about taking the fifth-rated quarterback for the draft as opposed to the second-rated left tackle or the top-rated edge rusher? That's what it's going to come down to. But, yeah, I think we're going to see a haul of quarterbacks at the start of the draft and maybe another trio going, you know, a little later as well.
What team do you think could make the biggest splash today at the draft?
I think it's unquestionably the Vikings because, you know, you look at all of the other quarterback-hungry teams, they all have lots and lots of work to do on their rosters. So you can make an argument at any point. Yeah, you know, maybe not for Chicago and Washington at the very top of the draft, but at pretty much elsewhere, you can make an argument that those teams would be as good, as well advised to go elsewhere as to take a quarterback. And again, it's a huge receiver draft. It's a strong offensive line draft, and it's a strong quarterback draft. So that always kind of affects, you know, how teams will look at things, and just in terms of where the drop-off is, where the cliffs are in terms of the drop-offs once you get to the talent, the top talent. But with the Vikings, I mean, this is a team that, you know, has lots of playmakers. This is a team that has a good offensive line. This is a team that, you know, has a coach in Kevin O'Connell who's a elite play caller. I mean, that's a place where you can plug and play a quarterback. And because they have the draft capital of having two first-round picks, I think they unquestionably are the team that it would be the most likely to sort of make a splash in the draft and all about this season and all about the quarterback position.
Dave Naylor, our guest, the NFL draft on TSN 7 o'clock tonight. The Buffalo Bills, we know their offseason included shipping Stephon Diggs out. Gabe Davis leaves for Jacksonville, and there's been a lot of speculation that they're going to be looking to draft a receiver. Do you expect them to stay? I believe they draft 28, Dave. Do you expect them maybe to try to move up and maybe get in the mix for an Odunze or a Neighbors or maybe even Marvin Harrison Jr.?
I don't think Marvin Harrison Jr., because I think he's going to be gone, you know, top five, top four sort of thing. I think where it could get interesting for the Bills is if, you know, Odunze or Neighbors, if one of them gets into the teams, you know, gets into, then I think it, and look, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but if it does, that's where you could see the Bills, I think, make a move up. And Brandon Bean's history, I believe he has moved up for every first-round pick he's made except for Ed Oliver. So he's had what? Like, I think his first draft was 2017, I believe. So, I mean, that's his history, right, is seeing – now, a lot – you know, in today's modern – the modern NFL philosophy is, you know, you don't move up. Like, don't believe your own eyes and don't think you've outsmarted everybody and give up draft capital move unless it's a quarterback. And obviously the Bills are not drafting a quarterback. So – I mean, there's a couple of theories on that. Like, yeah, you've got three elite receivers at the top of the draft. The Bills have got to go get one of them. Or the other way, looking at it, is, you know, a lot of the top draft analysts have, you know, 19 top three-round grades on the receivers in this draft. I mean, it's an insane receiver draft. So you can take it the other way and say, well, you know, you can sit at 28 and get a really good receiver. Or you could move up a little bit from 28 if you find a guy in the mid-20s that you really, really like, and you're just going to give a little bit of draft capital to move up. You don't necessarily have to, you know, plunge yourself into the top 10 because it is such an elite and such a deep draft at the receiver position. So I'm not even convinced the Bills will take a receiver because of the depth of the draft, to be honest. I mean, they have some real needs on the defensive line, particularly the interior defensive line. And again, you get to that situation at 28. Do you want to take the eighth best receiver, or do you want to take the third best defensive tackle or second best defensive tackle? That could be sort of a kind of scenario that the Bills are looking at. So and you can convince yourself because of the depth of the draft of the receiver position that, hey, we can double dip at the receiver position in rounds 2 and 4 and don't necessarily have to go there in the first round. So I know all of Bills Mafia is going to go insane, Carlo, if they don't take a receiver in the first round. But I'm just preparing everybody for the possibility that could happen or not happen.
Dave, well, what about the Canadians in the draft? I mean, Canada has produced some really quality NFL players over the last number of years. What can we expect? Maybe not tonight, but over the course of the next couple days.
Well, I think there's 4 or 5 players that have a pretty good chance of getting drafted from Canada. Last year was an all-time high, 5 players drafted. But I'm going to focus on a position we don't see very often come out of Canada, and that is tight end. I believe, based on my research, there have only been 2 tight ends from Canada ever selected in the NFL draft. One was O.J. Santiago out of Whitby, who played with the Atlanta Falcons, played in the Super Bowl. And the other one is our own Luke Wilson, of course, who from LaSalle, Ontario, played in a couple Super Bowls, won one, and has gone on to great things in TV now. I think that number, all-time number, is going to double by Saturday. Theo Johnson of Penn State, who's out of Windsor, Ontario, where I will be at his draft event on Friday night, and Tanner McLaughlin, who's a kid who is out of Lethbridge, Alberta, and originally committed to play basketball at the University of Lethbridge, ended up going to Southern Utah, then transferred. He was a receiver, transferred to tight end, where at Arizona, he caught more passes during his 2 seasons at Arizona than a guy named Gronk. Who, by the way, I was talking to Tanner this week. He's got to know Gronk a little bit because he makes his drop-ins down in Tucson. And, of course, he's playing Gronk's position on Gronk's team. So they have a bit of a relationship. And Tanner McLaughlin is a guy. He's more of a receiving tight end. I mean, that's his background. They say he adapted from receiver to tight end. So as you look at his college production, he's hit 79 catches in 2 seasons for almost 1,000 yards. But the question is going to be, can he block at the NFL level? When I was talking to him, one of the points he's making to teams is that he's only a couple of years into playing the tight end position. So he thinks he has a lot of development just as a tight end. And, Theo Johnson is a guy who in 4 years at Penn State, his role in the offense grew every single year. He's an elite blocker. He's an all-around athlete at the combine. I mean, he became the first tight end in the history of the NFL combine. No tight end had ever shown up at over 255 pounds, run a sub 4.6 second 40-yard dash, and verticaled over 39 inches. I mean, David Sanchez was with me at the combine. He said he verticaled over 39 inches at 260 pounds. Crazy. So yeah, he's a pretty freakish athlete, and was one of those guys who his freakish athleticism has sometimes made him perceived, or he thinks perceived, more as an athlete than a football player, especially coming out of Canada. Both these guys, all their high school football in Canada, which isn't that common these days for the elite prospects. But, we aired a story on SportsCenter last night that you can find online and on my Twitter and all that about Theo Johnson's family. And I got to say, man, in 30 years of storytelling about Canadian football players, I don't know that I've told a more remarkable story than that of Theo Johnson. And just to very quickly summarize it. His mother raised 6 kids by herself from the time that they were between the ages of about 2 and 10. And during that process, while raising 6 kids by herself, she went to law school and graduated law school at age 40.
Wow.
If you want to know where Theo Johnson's inspiration comes from, watch the feature. It's an amazing family story, and the Johnsons were just absolutely fantastic for us to work with. They really trusted us and told what is a very sensitive story, and we hope we did it justice. But it's take some time and watch that. We're really proud of it, and I think you want to learn something about what some players' families, them and their families, go through just on that path, on their journey in life. And in Theo Johnson, it's going to end up with his name being called from Detroit, the city that he grew up looking at as a Windsor kid. His mom, they moved to Windsor when Theo was, I think, about 10 years old. That was the school where his mother was accepted to the University of Windsor Law School, and they stayed there and have lived there ever since. So we talked about just kind of the the serendipity of his draft year coming up, the first time ever the NFL draft is being held in Detroit. And that is, as Theo actually has the skyline of Detroit tattooed on his bicep, because that's the vision he grew up watching as a kid.
That's very cool. We will retweet that on the First Up account, and we appreciate you doing this, Dave. Good luck tonight. We'll be watching all the content. We'll have you back on Tuesday to break down the CFL draft as well.
Excellent. Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
See you, Bill.
That's Dave Naylor, who apparently didn't get my joke there about the CFL draft. Maybe he thought I was being serious. I don't know. We'll find out. We will not be calling Dave Naylor for CFL draft breakdowns, people, I promise. What we will be doing is hearing some of our interview with Mike Johnson. He joined us earlier on the other side talking about the Leafs and the Bruins, plus my FanDuel best bets still to come. I got what they waiting for. My FanDuel best bets in 15 minutes. Earlier this morning, we had Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, on Leafs Breakfast. And great conversation. If you missed it, find our podcast, Spotify, Apple Music. Really good stuff from MJ. We're going to play you a little bit of it now. And this begins on what Mike thought of Brad Marchand's stellar performance last night in Toronto.
You know, Brad Marchand had the kind of game that Austin Matthews had in game two, right? Like, That this is what really good players do. Carly is saying Brad Marchand has had a big career out of being a clutch player playing in the playoffs. And, you know, he's going to make plays. The goal that he scored, I don't know if you guys, the first goal he scored, I thought that was a obviously a terrific shot. I would not categorize that as any sort of soft goal by Samsonov, just a really brilliant shot.
Elite.
Not much you can do about it. And I am curious, though, because, like, I get that he's a pest. I get that he gets involved in scrums and skirmishes, and he is very good at toeing the line and pushing the envelope, but not really getting called and drawing penalties himself. But like, the Leafs can't even think about being preoccupied with any of that stuff. It's just never going to change. You're not going to do anything about it. You're not going to bother him. You're not going to get the refs to call penalties on him. It seems like it should be easy to leave that alone, although right now maybe they aren't doing that as much as they should.
Johnny, do you think the turning point of that game was, I know the refs probably should have blew the whistle when Bertuzzi and Marchand were going at it, but that goal that Samsonov gave up, the first one to Frederick, that just can't go in.
Yeah, 100%. Like, yes, you can talk about, and we probably will, all the calls that could have been made or should have been made. You know, at the most, that would have been a coincidental minor, and perhaps people were a little bit distracted by the Bertuzzi and Marchand going at
each other. Looked like Samsonov was distracted by it too.
Apparently, but you're right. Like, there's nobody going to the net. There's no far post drive. There's no screen. There's no stick. You know, it's Trent Frederick. It's 35 feet wrister. Yeah, I know it hits the post, but you're right. Like, they just can't go in. And Samsonov up to that point had played so
amazing.
Well. Yeah. Amazing to start the game. Great saves, breakaway saves, shorthanded breakaways, you name it. But yeah, like, this is going to be a tough, tight margin game. And when Swayman's in the net right now, you're not going to get anything easy. So, yeah, you need him to play bad, but that's a goal that can't go in. You know, just can't go in the playoffs. They're too hard to score against, and that one really hurt.
So, Mike, special teams heading into the playoffs was a major topic of conversation for the Leafs. And through three games, Toronto is 1-for-11 on the power play. Boston is 5-for-10. They've gotten better goaltending for at least two of the three games, game one and game three. But with the power play, what, if anything, can you do if you're the Leafs to figure out a way to get it humming just a little bit?
Yeah, so it's a real problem. Like, the penalty kill, nothing new. And you'd be always worried about, if you're Toronto, that the penalty kill would hurt them because it wasn't very good during the regular season. But if the penalty kill was hurting them, then the power play would be helping them, right? Like, you're hoping at least that would wash itself out. And I mean, I think the first thing you do is hope that William Nylander is healthy enough to play in game four, because he is their power play driver. He leads the team in power play points. It's not Austin Matthews who leads them in goals, but it's William Nylander who helps on the entries. He helps with his dual threat shot pass. He helps at keeping pucks alive when they get the scrambled up. So first things first, if they get their normal personnel out there, that would be a great start. And the other part is, what Boston's done a really good job is they've really collapsed down around the front of the net. They haven't let much get through the seams. Everything's around the edges and pressured. And they got to find a way to make a couple good passes, clean, flat, stop the pressure, and then work to find the seams. The outside shots with all those people in front are not working right now. So it's about finding seams, getting to go through the box and not just around the edges of it.
Johnny, do you think there has to be a conversation here where the Maple Leafs actually break up this power play unit and do what Boston does, which surprised me in yesterday's game when they started the game. Benoit, 30 seconds into the game, throws the puck over the glass, and Pasternak's not even on the power play because they split up both Pasternak and Mascher, and they actually have two units that they use. Do you think that the Maple Leafs have to use this same approach and break up that power play? Like, when John Tavares, and I'm not blaming this on John Tavares, but when he wasn't on PP1 and they had two units that they were going with, that was the time of the year when the Maple Leafs really had a lot of success in the power play. Don't you think that's something they should be exploring right now?
Yeah, I'm sure they're exploring all ideas and looking across the other side of the ice and seeing a team that did something like that and it's worked really well. Yeah, that's something you'd think about. And it's not just like this series that the power play hasn't been good. The power play hasn't been good, surprisingly, you know,
the whole month of March.
Weeks, yeah, of the season, absolutely. So they came in cold. Now, the thing is, maybe it doesn't matter, but those five guys, or whoever the fifth guy is with Nylander out, they've played together so much. And there is chemistry there and familiarity and, you know, a trust that they will figure it out. They were one of the best teams in the league last year. I think they were second. This year, they're a top five team, even with a slow finish. I get wanting to give that group the benefit of the doubt and time and trust that they will figure it out, although time might be running short now because, as you mentioned, they don't get it done in game four. If they lose the power play battle or the special teams battle again, they very likely will be on the brink of elimination, you know, after Saturday night.
Johnny, I know you were a guy that was trying to tell everybody before this series started that Boston was going to split their goalies in games no matter what. Do you still feel the same way? Like, are we going to see Allmark in game four, or is Jim Montgomery going to absolutely lose his mind?
I think we will see Allmark again. And people might say,
how could you?
But I think for him, you know, the routine has worked well during the regular season. The routine has worked very well in the playoffs. Allmark played really, really well in game two. Like, the game should have been far more lopsided if it wasn't for his excellent play. So they haven't really given you any reason to go away from it other than Swayman and his great numbers against the Leafs this year. But what I think, why I think they'll do it one more time is that they're up in the series, right? Like, they can afford to keep going the rotation, go with it one more time. If Allmark wins, brilliant. If they lose, they're just tied 2-2. You're going back home. You have Swayman, who you love playing against Toronto. He'll play game five. And then the conversation becomes game six, where he might go back to Swayman and change the rotation. But I think the way Allmark played in game two and the fact that they're up, I think they do. I think he sticks with it, Carlo, going against conventional wisdom and rotates again.
It's a ballsy call, but I'm totally with you.
You. You look at Swayman's numbers. How can you even, like, why would you even think twice?
Swayman, 3-0 with a .959 save percentage in the regular season. Now 2-0 with a .955 save percentage in two starts, including 28-for-30 last night. I mean, listen, it's what they've done all year, as Johnny said.
I totally get it, but
again, Allmark won the Vezina last year. It's not like they're starting Joseph Wall.
You guys are all making great points, and I totally agree. But it's complete insanity.
I think it's a good thing for the Leafs. Like, I think they must be feeling much better about seeing Allmark in goal. Not that they blew him apart in game number two, but I'm sure the Leafs are like, all right, great, thank you very much. Like, well, we
doesn't matter, man.
If they don't
find a way to score three or more goals.
So, on that subject, your thoughts on Mitch Marner's performance last night, Mike?
So, yeah, I know Mitch Marner's been getting a ton of heat, ton of criticism. I think some of it is a little bit over the top. I get it. Like, I get that he's not played great in the first three games. I get that. You know, he's paid a lot of money and is expected to produce all the time. And I also get and concede that he had a tough series against Florida last year after a very good series against Tampa. But he still is like basically a point-a-game player in the playoffs, which is not easy to do for 50-something games. He is matching up against Pasternak in a defensive play and doing a pretty good job of keeping Pasternak relatively quiet at 5-on-5. Last night I thought he made a brilliant play on the goal. Like,
unbelievable.
You know, a play that, you know, most players, I don't know if they had another player on the team that could make that kind of pass. to find Nagy for that goal. I just wonder how healthy he is, because what makes Mitch Marner good is that he's darty quick, right? Like, he's quick to lose pucks, he's quick to space, quick to get open and make plays. And right now, he doesn't look quick.
That was some of our conversation with TSN hockey analyst Mike Johnson. If you want to hear the rest of it, again, find it and other segments and interviews with guests like James Duthie, MJ, Andrew Brewer, who joined us earlier, and Dave Naylor, wherever podcasts can be found. My FanDuel Best Bets can be found after this commercial break.
Time now.
Money talk.
Here comes the money.
Time now for today's Best Bets. They are powered by FanDuel. Barrios versus Reagans tonight in Kansas City. Easy under of 8 runs in that one. The Jays' offense stinks. Barrios has been absolutely filthy to start the year. I think it's like a 3-1 game tonight. Take the under of 8 runs. Looking at the NHL tonight, Sam Bennett out for the Florida Panthers. Tampa back at home. I like the Lightning pick up their first win of the best of 7 series against the Panthers. And the NBA tonight, Philadelphia, Joel Embiid, he said they were going to win the series against New York. If he's going to live up to that bold proclamation, they're going to need to win tonight, and I think they do. Take the Sixers on the money line. Today's best bets are powered by FanDuel. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today and find thousands of ways to play. Please play responsibly. 19 plus and physically located in Ontario. It's been quite the show. Quite the show. It's quite the night for you and I as well. Shaking hands, moving and shaking with the
kissing babies.
We kissed a couple of children. That sounded weird. Tom Brady style. Tom Brady style. Making out with his kids. That's still one of the more
smashing
weird
pizzas.
We did have some pizza. It was pretty tasty as well. Had an ice cream bar.
Yep.
Had some waters. It's good. It's good time.
Good times.
Good time.
Smashing
maybe Saturday. Popcorn. A return visit. Who knows?
Nah, I'm not going Saturday. I mean, I don't know yet. I might have some alumni stuff to do, but we'll see.
Ooh, yes. And the Jays game against the Dodgers.
Yeah, for sure.
Ohtani in town this weekend, so that's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of fun. As will tomorrow's show, the final one of the week. Thank you to Arad 20 Fingers. Excellent work, gentlemen. A fun show. And thank you to our audience for being with us for all 4 hours. We'll be back tomorrow morning. Tee up game 4, Leafs Bruins. It's going to be a doozy, Coco.
Special TGIF version of it. See you tomorrow. Ciao.
Yeti! I am the Yeti!
Formula One lives on TSN with every race all season long. And with TSN Plus, go that extra mile with onboard cameras, pit lane channel, and more.
Boy, is it good here.
F1 lives on TSN and TSN Plus.